Right. Shall we get started? As probably a lot of you know, I'm Holly Cummins. I work for IBM. This should be obvious to you because I have blue hair. It's compulsory at IBM to have blue hair. I was just talking to several of the server-side editors actually used to work for IBM, but they left because they couldn't hack the blue hair requirements. What I'm going to be talking about today is Java performance tooling. Now, I do work for IBM. Now, who here uses IBM JVMs? Oh, good, some of you do. What I'm going to be talking about, some of it is IBM specific. For a lot of it, even if you're not using IBM VMs, the principles should be quite universal. And as well, obviously, the VM is free. All the tools I'll be talking about are free. And so if you see a tool that you think, oh, actually, I could really use that. It would solve my performance problems. But you're not using an IBM VM at the moment. You can just move across, get it all for free, try it, see what you think. So I'll start by talking about when you would use a performance tool. And the answer is when you have a performance problem. Now, I expect some of you now are sort of thinking, oh gosh, I wonder if it's too late to go across to scaling my Spring application because I could have actually told Holly that I would use a performance tool when I had a performance application, a performance problem rather. But let me go into a bit more detail about what is a performance problem, because some of these, they seem quite different, but actually the way in which you go about solving them is the same. So the first performance problem is that it doesn't go as fast as you think it ought to. So you know, you think, I just have this gut feeling that I should be able to get 10 transactions per second, and I'm getting one, and that's just not right. The second case is when you think, you know, I've just got this gut feeling that I should be able to get about 10 transactions per second, and I'm getting about 10 transactions per second, but unfortunately my customer says I need 20 transactions per second, so what do I do? How do I make this work? In the third case, it starts out fine, it's all good, and then you leave it, think job done, and then you come back and it's a bit slower. And then you come back and it's a bit slower still and you think, oh, I can see the trend and I just don't want to be around when, you know, the inevitable happens. And in the fourth case, it's going fine and then it hangs. And this obviously, it's a pretty severe example of a performance problem, but it's still a performance problem. So, how do you fix a performance problem? The first thing you have to do is you have to come up with an accurate assessment of the performance problem. And to do that, you have to measure your performance. I don't know, were any of you in Brian and Cliff's talk this morning? One of the things that you absolutely must not do is find some performance advice that everybody knows is true. Apply it to your application to make it go faster and not actually measure what happened before and what happened after. Because so often these clever fixes just end up making things worse. And the other thing about measuring performance is that I'm going to be talking about performance tools, but we definitely do not provide a tool for measuring performance. The performance measurement, it has to be based on your application and your quality of service requirements. So, for example, it may be that throughput's what's important to you. It may be that response times are important. And then, if response times are important to you, you know, you may want to think a bit more carefully about what that means. Do you mean just mean response time, which is actually just really a throughput measurement? Or do you mean the 90th percentile response time? So, if you've got an application that's interactive and you've got users, 90th percentile is probably the important criteria. Or do you mean worst-case response time? If you've got something like flying a plane, then worst-case response time is probably the critical thing. 90th percentile is not going to be good enough when your plane is sitting there in a steaming wreck with, you know, burning people spilling out the windows. So when you measure performance, it's really quite tempting to say, well, this application, it's huge. You know, I've got 16 servers and 10 frameworks, and it's just too hard to try and set up a test server just to measure my performance. I'll use a benchmark instead. After all, everybody knows benchmarks are designed to predict and communicate performance. I want to predict and communicate performance, so obviously a benchmark is the tool for the job, right? So for example, you might think, which JVM is fastest? I'll just use a benchmark. But, and in fact, obviously benchmarks are used for this. All of the big JVM vendors, you know, we publish benchmark results, and we know that people are going to make decisions based on these benchmark results. But if you actually want to get the best performance for your application, you want to try it on your application, because every application has such different performance characteristics that the VM that's fastest on the benchmark is not necessarily going to be fastest for your application. And this is even more true when you're thinking about garbage collection. So you don't want to be tuning your garbage collection policy against a benchmark and then actually expecting that you've achieved the maximum performance for your application. Because garbage collection is so sensitive to the exact pattern of object sizes and how frequently they're created and how frequently you get rid of them and the connections between those objects, it's inevitably going to be different between a benchmark and your application. So there's a reason it's called performance tuning, and that's because sometimes you make a change and it makes it better. So for example, when you've got your radio, you know, you twizzle the knob and it gets clearer and you think, good, good. But then, you know, you don't keep twizzling the knob left because it worked the first time, because eventually you're going to slide off the station and into something that's just static again. And it's a bit the same with tuning an application. It's really quite subtle, and a change might be good up to a certain point, and then after that, not so good. And so you have to be aware that it's a bit tricky and a bit subtle, and that there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution for performance. If there was, quite a lot of us would be out of business, I think. So hopefully I've convinced you about benchmarks. Although before I move on, I will just tell you a story. We have a policy that every time we release a new JVM, it's got to be faster than the old JVM. And we try and make it, you know, quite significantly faster, but certainly at the very least we say, this new JVM is going to be faster, it's going to be better, and it's not going to regress the performance. And we did a beta program for one of our VM releases. And one of the customers came back to us and they said, you know, this new VM of yours, it's 10 times slower than the previous release. And we thought, oh, that's a bit weird, you know, because we thought it was faster, and we certainly did not think it was 10 times slower. So I said, oh, right, how did you measure that? And they said, oh, I ran a benchmark. And I thought, oh. And then they said, yes, I ran a micro benchmark. I ran Drystone. And I thought, oh. Because they'd managed to find one small area where there was a JIT optimization that it happened that the old VM hit properly and the new VM didn't. And so for this one micro benchmark, it went slower. For everything else, including their actual application, it went faster. But had they stopped at that and said, oh, the new VM's 10 times slower, they would have made such a disastrous performance decision. But they really thought, oh, well, I can run this new VM on a micro benchmark and come up with a really good assessment of how well it will run my application. Just, it was not a very bright thing to do. So hopefully I've convinced you that when you're using your performance tool, you want to use it on your real application and you don't want to use it on a benchmark. But we then come on to the question of workloads. Because setting up an application can be quite hard, but it can be even harder to actually come up with a realistic workload. And so usually it's so tempting to say, well, I'll just shove some data through the system. I've got my real application, so that's going to be good enough, right? You know, I've made quite a lot of effort here. But in fact, even with a simulated workload, you can get quite misleading results when you do your performance tuning. So again, going back to the example of garbage collection, it can be very sensitive, the garbage collection, to the exact, as I said, the exact pattern of your object sizes and how much variation there is in the data can give you a very different performance characteristic. And similarly, if you've got insufficient variation in your data, you may warm your caches artificially, or you may be disguised in an I.O. bottleneck, because when you run with the real data, it's going to be choking on I.O., but when you've got your simulated workload, it's fine on the I.O. So you can use a simulated workload, you just have to make sure that you think about it and try and get as good a simulation as possible. So now, moving on to what you do with your real application, with your fairly realistic simulated data. I showed this slide to a colleague, and I said, look at my slide. And she read the first sentence, and she said, the performance metrics from performance tools cannot tell you how well your application is performing. And she said, Holly, that doesn't actually make any sense. And I thought, oh dear. What this means is that performance tools can give you very good diagnostic clues about performance, but they cannot actually measure performance for you. That's not what they're for. They're for finding and solving problems, not measuring performance. So to take some examples, pause times cannot tell you what your application response times are. I worked in garbage collection performance for a long time before this was explained to me. Because, you know, you're working away and you've got a response time problem, and then you reduce your garbage collection pause times and you think, yeah, job done. And it may be that you have actually reduced your response times, but you have to go check, because sometimes you do get shorter pause times and longer response times. So that, you know, there's a bit of a correlation between the two, for sure, but they're not actually the same thing. If it's response times you care about, you need to be measuring response times, not pause times. And it's the same thing with the time spent in garbage collection. And I'm sorry to say, I've actually seen this in the quite excellent book, Java Performance Tuning. When you get to the section on garbage collection, it says, and what you do with your verbose GC is you look and you want to try and reduce your time spent in garbage collection. And sometimes this is true, but sometimes you actually get quite a lot more time spent in garbage collection because of some tuning change you've made. But your actual throughput is better, and often even your response times are better. And so in those cases, you don't want to be misled by just looking at your garbage collection overhead and say, oh, well, it was 15% and now it's 20%, so things must be worse. You have to actually look at the performance characteristics you're interested in. This is particularly true when you get into the territory of generational garbage collectors. They almost always use quite a lot more CPU than something like a Mark Sweep collector. But because of how much they speed up object allocation, and because of how much they optimize for the cache by giving you a compacted heap, that your performance is going to be better. But this is, it's not just true for generational collectors. So for example, if you change your GC settings so that it compacts more often, you know, this is probably not a tuning optimization you'd want to do all the time, or possibly even often. But you can usually squeeze more throughput out of an application by making it compact more aggressively. But of course, when you look at your garbage collection overhead, it's through the roof. You get a similar thing for a profiler. So you may see that, you know, you're trying to reduce how much time that is spent in a method, because you know that method's the hot method and the bad method. And you make a change, and suddenly more time is being spent in that method, and you think, oh, better undo that. But it may be, in fact, that your change allowed something to be inlined. And so, in fact, your application's running faster, even though more time is showing in the offending method. So the lesson of all of this is that you perhaps shouldn't try and be very smart when measuring application performance, and you shouldn't go to fancy performance tools in order to come up with performance metrics. All you actually have to do is look at your application, print out times, potentially, use a performance harness, make sure to warm up your caches, do repeated runs because you're going to get quite a lot of variability and take basic precautions like that, but you don't need to use performance tools. And now, having just spent the last six slides saying, whatever you do, don't use performance tools to measure performance, there is an exception. And that's that garbage collection can actually be a really effective, quick and dirty throughput measurement. And the reason for this is because if you think about it, when an application is running, it's generating garbage, and that garbage is a side effect of work. And so the more garbage you're generating, the better your application is going. And the more garbage you're generating, the more garbage you're collecting. So if you look at your rate of garbage collection, that's actually fairly closely correlated to your throughput, assuming that you haven't made a code change that makes it generate more garbage. And so what I've got here on the screen, it's a screenshot from one of our tools, which is the GC in memory visualizer, which used to be known as EVTK. And I've got circled here the rate of garbage collection, which gets shown in a summary report. And if you compare two runs, you can get a fairly good throughput indicator from that rate. So once you've come up with your good, warmed up, non-performance tool performance measurement, what do you do with it? Well, what you want to do is you want to then go and find your performance problems and fix them. And almost always, performance problems are caused because some resource is limited. And depending what you read, you find a number of different resources which could be limited. So sometimes you see two in the list, sometimes three in the list. I've got four in the list. So your application could be CPU bound. It could be I/O bound. It could be space bound, or it could be lock bound. And I was very sad, actually, because I thought I'd made lock bound up, and I was quite pleased with myself, and I thought, I've coined terminology. And then I went out to Google, and I found that there was actually quite a few references to it. So how do you decide which is the limited resource? Well, there's a few heuristics you can use. So if it's CPU bound, well, then your CPU utilization is going to be consistently high. If it's I/O bound, then your CPU utilization is going to be not consistently high. Similarly, if it's lock bound, not consistently high CPU utilization. And it gets a little bit more complex when you come to space bound, because the heuristic for that is any of the above. And so you can see this isn't really actually quite good enough to go on, is it? When you have a rule that says, well, if it's any of the above, it could be space bound, you think, oh, I need a bit more help. So this is where the performance tools come in. So IBM provide a number of tools. Lots of other people provide tools as well. Some of these tools are free. There are lots of commercial tools as well. The IBM tools, they're all free. Some of them are available from AlphaWorks. A lot of them are also available from IBM Support Assistant. Have any of you heard of IBM Support Assistant? Resounding silence. It's a new IBM strategy for delivering tools, because we looked around and we realized that we had so many performance tools, and everybody has a whole bunch of little jars of, you know, this little performance tool and that little performance tool, and you download them, and then you put them on your system, and then you forget where you put them, and then you never get the upgrade, and then some of them you get from AlphaWorks, some from DeveloperWorks, and we thought, let's just try and unify this a bit. So it's a one-stop shop for performance tooling. And so it does quite a lot more as well, actually, although I'm just going to talk about the tooling aspects. So it does automatic problem determination data gathering. So if you want to raise a PMR against IBM service, then this will automate that for you. If you want to search documentation, just an aggregated search across everything, it will do that as well. So I'm just going to hop out now and show you. This is IBM Support Assistant fired up. And we can see there's an updater tab here, and it will show you what you've got installed. And then there's this new plugins tab, and then you can just go and you can have a browse through what tools are available. And you don't have to know beforehand what the tool is that you want. You can just look there and see what interests you. And then on the tools tab, you can see I've got a bunch of tools downloaded here, and they're all accessible from the same place. So I'll start off with diagnosing space-bound applications. It's, like I said, it's sort of subtle and tricky to diagnose a space-bound application, because certainly in Java we've got garbage collection. And so a space-bound application can be disguised as a CPU-bound application. You know, the garbage collector is running too often because you just haven't got enough space, and as a consequence, your CPU is just really thrashing away. Alternatively, the exact same problem can be disguised as an I/O-bound problem. So if you're paging and you're garbage collecting, then you're going to spend so much time just bringing the pages into memory. And even if you're not going out to disk, even if you've just got cache misses, you are going to see an I/O hit from doing too much garbage collection. So was there a question up at the front? Oh, sorry. Do you mind, can we, I think, because we're being filmed, if you can bring the microphone up. Okay. I'll repeat the question.
The question that I was asking was that the tools that you're talking about, is that specific to only IBM JVMs or any JVMs?
That depends. What I'm about to show you, the GCM Memory Visualizer, that works on any VM. Most of the others are quite specific to the IBM VMs. Yeah.
Not all of them are for all the
JVMs. No, some are IBM specific. And so in some cases, there's a strategy for solving the problem right. And so taking the example of the space-bound application, the strategy for solving a space-bound or even diagnosing a space-bound issue is that you look at your verbose GC and you see if your GC is running too much. And that's going to be the strategy no matter what VM you're using. And it happens for the verbose GC that this tool does work across not all, but a great deal of VMs. For some of the others, I think the solution that I'm going to present is maybe more specific to an IBM VM, and then there may be another solution as well that, you know, isn't an IBM one that I don't mention. So going back to the space bound, it really is quite simple in this case. The standard first thing that you do is you enable verbose garbage collection just to see what's going on in the heap. Our service team actually wished that we ran with verbose garbage collection on all the time because the overhead is so low and the information it gives you is so valuable as to what's going on. And so once you've got your verbose GC log, you can feed it into a verbose GC analysis tool. There are an enormous quantity of these. The one I'm going to talk about is an IBM one. It's the IBM Monitoring and Diagnostic Tools for Java GC and Memory Visualizer. This used to be known as EVTK, which is a rather shorter name. And just going back to your question, this is one of the tools I'm going to talk about which does actually work. It works for all IBM VMs, so it handles 1.4.2 and lower, it handles 1.5.0 and above. It handles Z series, it handles I series, which has a different verbose GC format. It also handles Solaris platforms, and it also handles HP platforms. So as far as I know, there's not a verbose GC analysis tool which has a better platform coverage than this one.
But I meant like, not only the IBM JVMs,
but I'm talking about the standard. Yeah, that's what these last two bullet points are, is the Solaris and the HP. Is the non-IBM VMs. And so it's got quite a few other neat features. It does the things that you'd expect. So you can look at your heap usage, you can look at your pause times. These are going to be the two main things that you look at to diagnose a space issue. It also provides tuning recommendations. You can compare multiple logs in the same plot and in the same report, which is quite useful when you make a change and then you want to see, well, did I make things better or worse? There are many views on the data, so there's a report with a tuning recommendation and a summary. You get graphs, as you'd expect. You get tables. Your tables you can export to a spreadsheet. Your reports you can save as HTML. So here's some screenshots, but I think instead of doing screenshots, what I'll do is I'll do a live demo. So I'm launching it from ISA here. I'll start by opening a file. This log, it's kind of cute because it came in from a customer. And you look at it and you think, oh. And I'm just going to go to the advanced perspective here and change the units. And once you look at it in hours, it's pretty obvious what's going on. There's quite a lot of activity for 4 hours, and then nothing happens for a further 16. And then there's quite a lot of activity for 4 hours again. And so in this case, when you're looking at your performance, you probably don't really want to be focusing on optimizing the performance when nothing's happening. The performance problem is going to be here in this period. And so the GCM Memory Visualizer allows you to zoom in. And before I show that, I'll just go over to the report. As you can see, there's quite a lot of recommendations. And then there's a summary table. And I can see that my rate of garbage collection is this rather enormous 12,000 megabytes per hour. And the GC overhead is about 5% time spent in garbage collection. Now, if I zoom in, go back to the line plot. I'll zoom in just on that first busy period. When you go back to the report, you can see the tuning recommendation has changed if you look closely, although I can't imagine any of you can actually read that, particularly not at the back of the room. But when I scroll down, you can see the rate of garbage collection is now 14,000. So as you'd expect, during the busy period, it's doing more work than during the quiet period. And during the busy period, there's also quite a lot more time spent in garbage collection. So it's spending 11% of its time during garbage collection instead of 5%. And so the lesson here is that if you have a workload which is quite variable, you need to look at just part of your logs, because otherwise you're going to look and you're going to say, well, I'm only spending 5% of my time in garbage collection, I've got no problem. Were you so foolish as to use the garbage collection overhead as your metric of performance, which you obviously shouldn't. But in fact, you've got 11% of your time being spent in garbage collection, which is less good. And in this case, there's a few simple tuning things that could be done to make this perform much more effectively. I'll show you now another feature, which is the ability to compare logs. And so what I've got here is I've got two logs from a benchmark. And so I've got here a heap usage, and my used heap is going up. And now I'm going to compare it to, that was done with an opt throughput policy, which is IBM's Mark Suite policy. IBM, I don't know if any of you know this, IBM offers both a generational and a Mark Sweep. And in many cases, the generational garbage collection is going to be quite good, and in many cases, it's going to really just utterly defeat the Mark Sweep. But it depends, again, on your application and the exact pattern of how you're using your objects and how long they live. Because in a lot of cases, Mark Sweep is actually still the best garbage collection policy. It's old-fashioned, but it works. Right, so going back, this is the log from the generational. And the first thing to observe is that it's actually taking quite a lot longer to open this log than it did the other one, and that's because in the generational policy, it collects a lot more often. And so there's a lot more verbose GC log to look at. Going to the line plot, you can really see this, actually. You can see these spikes. What's happening here is that it's doing a whole bunch of collections in the nursery, which is the young area. And then every now and then, it's doing a collection in the old area, too. And when it does that, the heap usage really quite dramatically drops, and then it inches up again. Now, another thing to look at, I'll just go to the report. The GCM Memory Visualizer, in most cases, the things you're going to be interested in plotting are your used heap, your pause times. And, you know, I have a response time problem. Could it be that my garbage collection is causing it? Well, my garbage collection pauses are 10 seconds, so yeah, probably. Or, well, my garbage collection pauses are 1 millisecond, so it's not the garbage collection pauses which are causing the problem. But you can also, in the verbose GC, there's a lot more information. And so what I'm plotting here is the weak references. And there's all these spikes in the weak references. And what's happening there is it's done two system garbage collections in a row, and that's forced a huge clearance of the weak references, and so the number cleared goes up. But you can see there's not actually a lot of weak references being cleared, even so. I once had a problem where I had a memory leak, and I thought, I'll use a weak reference to solve my memory leak. Put in a weak hash map, was quite pleased with myself, thought job done. Stupidly, did not go back and check, because I knew I'd solved the problem, so I didn't need to check. You know, it's like when you check a change in and you don't bother to compile it because you know you've just made such a trivial change and that's when you break the build. It was a bit the same here. And so I hadn't fixed my memory leak at all because my weak references weren't being cleared. And then when I realized I had the problem, I went back and I licked, and sure enough, when I licked at my weak references, hardly any were being cleared. And then I investigated a bit more, implemented my weak references a bit more cleverly, and then all of a sudden when I looked at this plot, I could see that I was clearing thousands of weak references, and I knew the job was done. So I've got another demo here, which I think I'll leave in the slides, since the slides are available and you can go look at them, which is sizing the heap. And you can go through, and it's probably fairly important to look at your application heap usage and make sure that you at least have some awareness of how much heap your application's using. For one thing, if the application uses quite a lot of memory, most JVMs will avoid using more than half the physical memory on a box, just as a courtesy to the other applications. It's a bit impolite to use all the memory. And so if your application needs more memory than that, then you've got to manually set the heap, and you probably want to know what size to set it to. So I'll just hop through this. You can see just on this slide here what I've got. Is this is the time it took to run my little micro benchmark. And when I had a very small heap, it took forever. It took 30 seconds. And then there was diminishing returns. So once I've made the heap remotely reasonable, I was down to about 10 seconds. And then increasing the heap after that gave a slight improvement to how long it took to run my little benchmark, but not a very significant one at all, really. And because I work a lot with garbage collection, I get asked, so how big should I make my heap? You know, what's the right heap size? And I think, like quite a lot of things to do with performance, there is no one right answer. It would be so much easier if there was, and we could just say your heap size should be this. But one of the things you have to consider is, well, what kind of system am I running on? What other demands are there on the heap? You know, if you're running an IDE on your laptop, you're probably not going to want to give it a huge heap because you're also going to be running an email client and lots of other stuff. But then if you're running something on a server, well, then maybe performance is the most important thing to you. You've got memory to spare. Then you want to give it quite a large heap. But even then, it's not quite so clear-cut as that. Because with a large heap, you will get better performance, but it's diminishing returns. So maybe you'd be better off using that heap to just run a second VM instead. And also with very large heaps, you get quite long pause times. And so if the pause time is the most important thing to you, well then maybe you want to keep your heap smaller. And this is even more true then when it comes to a generational policy and you look at how you've sized your nursery and you say, okay, well maybe I'm going to size my nursery quite small so that I get really rapid collections, even though the collections happen more often. So I hate to even put a figure on it, but as a really rough rule of thumb, 70% occupancy is probably a good thing to aim for as sort of an upper limit. And if you have room beyond that, then maybe aiming for 50% occupancy. It's the compromise between improving performance and avoiding waste. Now, in some cases, you're gonna size your heap and you're gonna say, okay, well, I reckon I use a gigabyte for my application, and so I'll make my heap, you know, 1.5 gigabytes in order to have some room to spare. And then you think about it and you think, all I'm doing is hello world. Why do I need 1.5 gigabytes to do this? So one of the things that assessing your footprint tells you is, are my memory requirements reasonable? And if not, what am I doing wrong? And there's a lot of things that can cause an application to use more memory than you think it should. You may be caching too much. You may have some, again, sort of a very C style of programming where you're defensively cloning, and every time an object gets passed around, you make a copy of it in case somebody else touches that object. In some cases, you know, that's a good pattern and it's the right thing to do. In a lot of cases, it's just going to give you heap bloat and you find another solution to the problem. Or sometimes you're just storing too much data. You have an object structure and you've got these fields in it that you're never really reading, and yet you're still carrying them around, and you've got thousands of those objects that are going in the heap, and you think, okay, well, can I get rid of this data? Can I trim things down a bit? Alternatively, and I've got this in for completeness, but I'm not sure it's ever actually happened to me or to anybody I know. Sometimes the solution is that you're using a lot less memory than you think you should be. And so in that case, you say, oh, okay, well, I can cache a bit then, can't I? You know, all I need is, you know, this much memory, so let me cache everything that I've ever used in order to squeeze out that throughput. Although, in the more realistic case where you want to use less memory rather than more memory, once you've realized that you're using too much memory, the verbose GC isn't going to tell you what it's collecting. It's not going to tell you what the offending objects are in the heap. And so in that case, you need to go and you need to take a heap dump. And then you need to feed the heap dump into a heap dump analysis tool. You know, if you go out of memory in the really severe case, you're going to get a heap dump automatically. Otherwise, you can trigger a heap dump. Although, when you're looking at your heap dump and when you're looking at your memory usage, it's important to not forget native memory, because I think it's not necessarily very widely known that when you get an out of memory in Java, it doesn't necessarily mean you ran out of heap. It could mean you ran out of native memory. And so quite often what will happen is you'll have a Java object that, and you're creating too many of it, and it's got a really small Java front end on top of this massive native back end, and you create too many of them, you leak them or something, and then you run out of native memory, and then you look at your heap and you think, but you know, I'm only using 20% of the heap, what's going on? And in that case, what's going on is that you've leaked native memory, or you've just found some pattern that's using too much native memory. And of course, you can make this worse if you're not careful, because there's a finite amount of memory on the box and a finite amount of addresses, certainly with 32 bits. So you go out of memory, and then you say, ooh, I better make my heap bigger. So you make your heap bigger, and that leaves less room for the native memory, which means you go out of memory even faster after fixing the problem, which is a bit depressing. And the GC and memory visualizer can visualize native memory as well. It ships with little PS scripts or little SVMon scripts, and you can run those and you can feed the output into the GC and memory visualizer, and then you can look and you can say, is this leaking or am I just using a lot of native memory? So going back to identifying what the offending objects are, the IBM tool for this is called MDD for J. It's available through IBM Support Assistant, the same as the GC and memory visualizer. And I've got a little screenshot of it there. It gives you a little tree view of who's hanging on to what objects and what the relationships between them are. And I've got another screenshot here. I haven't got a demonstration of this because for a non-trivial demonstration, you really need quite a large dump. And to feed quite a large dump in it in front of a live audience is a bit dull for the live audience, because you sit there and you think, oh, it's taking a minute to load, and she's desperately making jokes and dancing around the stage, and I'm really bored. So what instead I've got is a completely illegible, probably, screenshot. What this is showing you in this particular case, that little line there. I don't know if you can read it. It says hash table. And it's showing you that in this case, what you've got on the heap is an enormous hash table. And this page is showing you the same thing. And so it's saying that in your heap, you've got an enormous quantity of integers and an enormous quantity of hash tables. And then you sort of start to think, why am I storing integers in a hash table anyway? And perhaps some other solution that didn't involve putting integers as keys into a hash table would be a good idea. So what if you've looked at your garbage collection and miraculously the garbage collection wasn't actually the problem? Well, in that case, you move on and you say, it might be my application rather than the garbage collection which is causing me my performance problem. And so what kind of application problems can cause this? Well, the simplest one is that your code is just being invoked more than it needs to be, particularly with an event-driven model. You know, you have something fires an event, and then something else fires the same event. You're doing too much work. Alternatively, you've just got an algorithm, and it's just not a very efficient algorithm. And of course, this is so easy to do, because there's a lot of people who invest a lot of time in coming up with the most optimal algorithm, and if you don't go away and do your research, if you just naively code it up, you're sometimes going to come up with something which isn't optimum. And so in order to fix a CPU-bound application, you need to know what code is being run, obviously. This allows you to do two things. The first is you can identify a method which is suitable for optimization. So if you see, you know, that 20% of your time is being spent in this method, and you think, okay, it's reasonable that I'm spending 20% of the time in that method because that's the bulk of my application. But then you say, I'm going to optimize that method. And you certainly must avoid optimizing methods where you're not spending time because it's just a waste of your time, really. The other thing that you can get from looking at what's being run is sometimes you see, this method is really quite trivial. And yet, half of my application time is being spent in this method. I'm obviously calling it much more than I realized I was when I wrote the code. I thought a bit about before putting this in, because the title of the talk is Performance Tools, and this isn't actually a performance tool, but it's such a cool facility that I put it in the end. I went years ago to a talk on Log4j, and they talked about entry and exit trace, and we thought, oh, well, this is quite good. But then you leave with this sort of unsatisfied feeling and you think, why am I having to code entry and exit trace log methods? This should be in the JVM. And in fact, it is in the JVM, or at least the IBM JVM. It's instrumentation free and you don't have to write any extra code. The downside is that you do have to write a slightly nasty command line. But if you can get over that, it's incredibly powerful. You can select what methods get entry and exit traced. You get microsecond timestamps. You get thread information. And it's really very efficient. It's not overhead-free. It's sort of unsurprisingly, when you get this kind of function out, it's going to have a cost. You're printing things. You're generating strings. But it's definitely a lower overhead than the equivalent function implemented in Java, no matter how you did it. So you are better off using the method trace rather than a logging framework. And I've got these again in here for reference. I don't think you want me to go through them because it's command line syntax. It's not very exciting. But the point is that you can use wildcards to select what gets traced. You can also use wildcards to select what doesn't get traced. So you can say, trace all these methods in this package except for that method, actually, which I know is quite boring. You can use the package name, you can use the class name, you can use the method name. If you do this unwisely, you will get an enormous quantity of output as you trace the entire operation of your application. So do be careful and use sensible specifications when you enable method trace. The other thing you can do with method trace is you can trigger events, which is, again, just really quite phenomenally cool. So you can say, I know I've got a memory leak, and I think I want to see what the state of my heap is before I call this method and what the state of my heap is after I call this method. And then you can use method trace to do that. So you say, when I enter this method, give me a dump. And then when I exit this method, give me a dump. And then you can compare the two. And you can also specify how many times it happens. So you say, well, I don't actually want a dump every single time I enter this method. Just the first time will be sufficient. And the other thing you can do is you can do the same thing for the method trace. So you can say, once I've entered this method, allow me to trace every single application execution until I exit that method. So you can get a really detailed view of just one path of the code. So again, these are available in the slide reference, but I don't think you want me to go through them in detail. Another thing to note, though, is that you don't have to enable the trace on the command line. You can do it at runtime. You can also trace the count, just count the trace points. And so this gives you sort of a, again, it's a profiler, effectively. You can say, well, how many times am I hitting this method? Is that what I expect? I did the first revision of these slides, and I'd got to the end of my four resource bottlenecks. And then I realized that I hadn't actually put in anything for I/O bound at all. Part of the reason for this is because it's not really a JVM tooling thing. It tends to be something that happens at system level, and people tend to use system level tools in order to diagnose I/O issues. There is an exception to this, which is that the GCN Memory Visualizer, or any verbose garbage collection tool, really, can give you an indication of your paging. Because one of the rules of mark sweep garbage collection is that your sweep times should be short. And if your sweep times are long, this means you're going out to disk. And so you can immediately say, I'm paging, this is catastrophic for performance, let me fix it. And the other thing you can do is you can use method trace to trace your calls to the network or to trace your calls to disk I/O so you can see, why am I going out to disk, when is it happening, how often is it happening. So finally, I'll talk a bit about lock-bound applications. So certainly, I think we all know that if you've got synchronization and it's not working well for you, you are going to get application delays. And we do have a tool to quickly identify contended locks. Now, I showed these slides to my third-line manager, my boss's boss's boss, just to make sure I wasn't going to say anything that was going to get IBM sued. And he came back and he said, I think you mean contended locks instead of contended locks. And I looked and I thought, oh dear, well, he's a bit old, isn't he? And he's obviously starting to go a bit mad, and it's so sad when you see executives losing their mind. And then I read it a bit more carefully, and I realized what I actually had a typo, and I hadn't even seen the typo when he pointed it out to me, which is that I'd said contented lock instead of contended lock. And of course, a contented lock is a happy little lock, and you're very, you know, that's a good thing. You aim for contented locks, and you wish to avoid contended locks. And the tool we have to distinguish the contented locks from the contended locks is the IBM Lock Analyzer for Java, which is available via AlphaWorks. And it gives you data on the monitors, and you can see which lock... Well, first of all, you can see, have I got a problem with my locks? And then you can see which locks are causing the problems. And so I've just got a screenshot here of the JLA. And you can see the height of the bar indicates how often the lock is causing contention. And the color of the bar... The height of the bar gives you the actual impact to your application. That's saying, so how often am I having to wait on this lock? The color of the bar is kind of more a diagnostic clue, and that's showing you what percentage of the time you're having to wait on it. And so this particular bar here is showing it's a really unfortunate lock. Almost all the time something calls it, it's having to wait. But this lock actually has the more significant impact. And so ideally, you'd fix both of them, really. But this is the place to start. And alternatively, if you just get a flat line, it means you haven't got any problematic locks. And just, I've got a final slide here, which is almost certainly only relevant to those of you who are using the IBM JVM. And that's about another tool of ours called the Dump Analyzer. And this one doesn't really fit into the neat categories that I had before of space-bound, lock-bound, IO-bound. What this tool is you feed in a dump, and it distills the collected wisdom of our service teams in order to look for patterns in the dump and say, ah, your problem here is this. And Webster also contribute quite a lot of analyzers to the dump analyzer. And so if you're using WebSphere, then it can look for some quite WebSphere-specific problems that we get coming in for customers and identify them, you know, at the customer stage. So just to wrap up, the first principle of improving performance is that you identify what resource is limited and then free the limitation on that resource. And tools really can help with this. And we've got a number of tools from IBM, which hopefully you'll find useful. This is the trademark page. Are there any questions?
First, I'm going to apologize in advance because I came into the talk late, so maybe you covered this already. But do you guys have any tools around allocation site tracking to track down where, you know, massive numbers of hash tables might be coming from or things like that?
We don't. It's a popular request, but it's not something we do at the moment. Are there any other questions? Oh, there's one at the back, I think.
I saw that kill minus three gives you the dump. What kind of dump is that? I thought it only gives you the thread dump. Does it give you memory dump?
It should do. Certainly on the IBM VM, it's very configurable what dumps you get at what times. So by default on an out-of-memory, you get a heap dump, but you can change it so that you get a system dump. But I believe, certainly on the IBM VM, on kill minus three, I think you do get either, I think you get a system dump. I think you get the full thing. And certainly if not, it's easily configurable with an environment variable. Any other questions? No, I think that's it. So thank you very much, everybody.